Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, July 29th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
the U.S. and China prepare to restart trade talks.
Stocks in Hong Kong slide after an eighth week of protests.
The pound weakens as Boris Johnson prepares for a no-deal Brexit.
And Wall Street awaits the Fed's first rate cut in a decade.
A mass shooting at a food festival in California.
We just heard pop, 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 pop.
And President Trump taps a loyalist to be Director of National Intelligence. I'm John Tucker. Those stories straight ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Yankees salvaged the game in Boston. The Mets held on, finished a sweep of the Pirates. They also acquired pitcher Marcus Stroman from Toronto.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures are little changed this morning after a down day for stocks in Asia. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are, again, little changed. So we're Dow futures, NASDAQ futures down 3. The DAX in Germany, little change. CAC in Paris down about a tenth of a percent, while the FTSE 100 is up 1.2%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.2%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong fell 1%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.05%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.84%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.2% or 10 cents at $56.30 a barrel. COMEX gold is little change, down 90 cents at $14.31.20 an ounce. The euro 1.1121 against the dollar, and the yen 108.65. Nathan.
Karen, trade negotiations, the Fed, and protests in Hong Kong are in focus. Let's begin with trade, where we have Secretary of Treasury Steven Mnuchin and Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer heading to Shanghai for the first round of talks in nearly 3 months. Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie has the very latest from Beijing.
You've had both sides coming out and downplaying expectations. And in some respects, China's position has become less flexible since May. They've outlined 3 key demands. One of them, of course, is the removal of all tariffs immediately. They also say they want a balanced deal and a deal that has less onerous demands in terms of purchases of U.S. agricultural products. The U.S. are saying, look, we want to go back to the deal that we thought we had before China did a U-turn, as the U.S. would portray it, and went back on some of their commitments. Progress in these talks that are going to run from Tuesday to Wednesday would be any agreement to continue those talks in Washington.
Meanwhile, President Trump says China may try to wait till after the 2020 election to sign a trade agreement. He says Beijing would prefer to reach a deal with a Democrat.
If I had a 2% chance of losing the election, I think China would probably say, let's wait. Let's wait. Maybe Trump will lose and we can deal with another dope or another stiff.
Protests in Hong Kong are also providing a tense backdrop for talks, with Beijing calling Washington, quote, the black hand behind anti-government demonstrations.
And those protests were back in full force this weekend. Police deployed tear gas and rubber bullets to clear thousands of demonstrators from downtown Hong Kong. It was the eighth straight week of protests. Bloomberg's David Tweed reports from the streets of Hong Kong.
The tear gas actually wafted all the way up the streets at the conclusion of an extremely chaotic 3 days of protest here in Hong Kong. It started on Friday at the airport, thousands of protesters to deliver their message to tourists coming into Hong Kong. That was again repeated with violent protests out in Yuen Long. Yuen Long was the scene last week where mobs of anti-protest men, some say linked to organized crime, beat up protesters in the trains. On Saturday, the protesters were back out there, this time targeting the police. Here right now, it's pretty much been cleaned up. One thing that seems to be clear, the protest movement is becoming much more fragmented and much, much more difficult for the police to handle.
Today, China is weighing in on the demonstrations, with the Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office saying it continues to support Carrie Lam as chief executive and that those responsible for the protests must be punished.
On the financial front, it was a mostly down day for stocks in Asia as sentiment in Hong Kong took a hit from the weekend violence. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The Hang Seng Index fell to six-week lows in Hong Kong, while the property index had its sharpest slump since January. Japanese stocks were dented by a stronger yen, with the Nikkei 225 down 0.2%. The Kospi in Seoul fell to its lowest level since May the 29th, down almost 2%, as analysts forecast weak earnings growth and foreigners sold out of the market. But Australian stocks reached all-time highs on the broader All Ordinaries Index, while the ASX 200 of the top 200 stocks down under closed just shy of a record. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. The pound weakening this morning, currently at 1.2324 against the dollar, as UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson ramps up preparations for a no-deal Brexit. Bloomberg's Sebastian Salek joins us live from London with the very latest. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. The Prime Minister's high-level Brexit cabinet holds its first meeting today. The group of six senior ministers will gather every day to ensure the UK leaves the EU on October the 31st. Michael Gove will lead the sessions as the government steps up preparations for a no-deal Brexit. He says that's the most likely outcome unless Brussels agrees to reopen negotiations. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salek, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Sebastian, thank you. Back here in the U.S., the Federal Reserve is set to cut interest rates for the first time in a decade. Economists forecast a decrease of 25 basis points this week, while some are betting on a cut as deep as 50. Stephen Gallo is head of FX strategy at BMO Capital Markets.
I think there's a risk of 50, but I think sort of the backdrop of the decision is the more important thing here. I mean, the U.S. data have not been disastrous in any way, shape, or form. What it really is going to probably look like is the Fed is delivering a modest insurance cut and using relatively low inflation as a benchmark or a guidepost, if you like.
Also this week, we get the monthly U.S. payrolls report. Economists predict the economy added 166,000 jobs in July.
On the corporate front, London Stock Exchange Group is in discussions to acquire Refinitiv. Investors are backing its $27 billion bid for the financial data and trading platform that has shares of LSE up 14% in London.
And shares of Mylan are up more than 25% in early trading. That's after sources told Bloomberg Pfizer's in talks to merge its off-patent drugs business with Mylan to form a generic drug giant. Shares of Pfizer are higher by 0.5%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And at 5:07 on Wall Street, we check in with John Tucker to see what's going on around the world. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Nathan. At least four people killed, including a suspect. At least 15 wounded after a shooting at the annual Garlic Festival in Gilroy, California, near San Francisco Sunday evening. Gilroy Police Chief Scott Smithy says there may be a second suspect who served in a support role.
We believe, based on witness statements, that there was a second individual involved in some way. We just don't know in what way.
Police say a suspect cut through a fence to gain access. The wounded were taken to multiple hospitals. Their conditions range from fair to critical. The president continuing his attacks on Baltimore and Congressman Elijah Cummings over the weekend, calling the black congressman a racist. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has that story.
The president tweeting and his chief of staff Mick Mulvaney on Fox.
The richest state in the nation has abject poverty like that. A state, by the way, dominated for generations by Democrats. I think it's fair to have that conversation.
But Justice Committee Chair Gerald Nadler on ABC says this is just vintage Trump strategy, and then takes it one step further.
Well, the president is, as he usually is or often is, disgusting and racist.
In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And the House Judiciary Chairman, Congressman Nadler, says his committee is still exploring impeachment for President Trump.
We have impeachment resolutions before the committee. We are conducting investigations to determine whether we should report those impeachment resolutions to the House or whether we should draft our own and report them to the House. We are considering those resolutions.
He was on ABC's This Week saying the president has done many impeachable offenses. President Trump says he plans to nominate a loyalist, Representative John Ratcliffe, as Director of National Intelligence, replacing Dan Coats, who he said would depart the office on August 15th. Coats repeatedly disagreed with the president on key national security claims since taking the post on March of 2017. 53-year-old Ratcliffe played a prominent role in last week's House hearing featuring Robert Mueller when the third-term lawmaker tore into the former special counsel as having violated every principle in the most sacred traditions of prosecutors. and the death toll from an attack against the Kabul office of the Afghan president's running mate and former chief of intelligence service has climbed to at least 20 people. Around 50 others were wounded in Sunday's attack. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, John. Coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, it was the worst week by Yankees starting pitchers in team history. But last night, Yanks gave the ball to Domingo Herman. He's been their best starter, certainly from a one-loss standpoint. He improved to 13-2. Pitched into the sixth inning, struck out nine. Yanks held on, salvaged the game in Boston, 9-6. Two-run homers from Austin Romine and D.D. Gregorius made for a relieved skipper, Aaron Boone.
It definitely felt good to get this one. Obviously, it's been a difficult weekend for us, and it was difficult even finishing it off. They kept grinding, making it tough on us. We made enough plays in the end, so I think, you know, obviously that's a happy room to finish off what, in a lot of ways, was a difficult week for us, obviously, but to go to two really tough places and in a difficult week, at least go back with three wins in the pocket, you know, we'll take it.
Off tonight, home tomorrow for Arizona. The Yankee GM Brian Cashman will be working the phones until Wednesday's trade deadline. Yanks could use a pitcher. It won't be Marcus Stroman, the Long Island native, an ERA under three in Toronto. He's coming to New York, but he's coming to the Mets, who figured to be sellers, not buyers. Will Stroman take the place of the Met rotation of Noah Syndergaard or Zach Wheeler? They've both been rumored to be on the trade block. Mets had a good weekend. They continue to play well at home. Swept the Pirates. They're up 6-0. They held on to win 8-7. Brooks Koepka said he only practices for major golf tournaments. He's been dominant in those. Hasn't won a lot outside of majors, but in Memphis, Koepka won the World Golf Championship in the St. Jude Classic. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. Futures on Wall Street, little changed ahead of the open of a very busy week for the U.S. economy. S&P futures are a little changed to lower. Dow futures up, but just by 2 points. NASDAQ futures are down 3 points. The 10-year's up, 3/32. The yield, 2.05%, close to 2.06. And the 2-year Treasury yield is at 1.84%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we speak with AXA Investment Manager Senior Economist David Page ahead of a new round of trade talks with China and the Fed's rate decision. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European shares are rising. S&P 500 futures are little changed, and Asian stocks fell at the start of a packed week featuring everything from the resumption of U.S.-China trade talks to an expected Federal Reserve interest rate cut and the monthly U.S. payrolls report. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Again, S&P futures are in little change, so are Dow futures. NASDAQ futures down 3. The FTSE 100 is up 1.2%, while the DAX in Germany is down less than a tenth of a percent. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.05%, yield on the 2-year 1.84%. NYMEX crude oil up a tenth of a percent or 5 cents at $56.25 a barrel. COMEX gold down a tenth of a percent at $1.10 to $14.31.10 an ounce. The euro 1.1124 against the dollar. The British pound at 1.2328 and the yen 108.63. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. China says violent protests in Hong Kong won't be tolerated in the Beijing government's most high-profile response to the unrest rocking the Asian financial hub. And police say a suspect cut through a fence to gain access to a California festival before opening fire with a rifle and killing three people in Gilroy. The suspect was killed by police. Sports, the Yankees avoid the sweep and beat the Red Sox. The Mets win and acquire Toronto pitcher Marcus Stroman. Elsewhere, the Nationals, Giants, and A's win. The Orioles lose. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It is 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. David Page is our guest this morning. He's senior economist at AXA Investment Managers. As we await the Federal Reserve rate decision on Wednesday, David, markets pricing in at least a quarter percentage point rate cut. Do you see the Fed moving any deeper than that?
No, we don't. I think the Fed has given some signals to suggest that they don't want to do that. I think when you look at Bullard, you know, President Bullard, one of the sort of key doves on the committee for a while, he very clearly said that he didn't see a need for anything more than 25 basis points. And I think we should listen to that as the signal. So I think, you know, we get the 25 basis points that markets are broadly pricing in now. I think the real question is going to be the tone that Powell then adopts thereafter. And to our minds, you know, with the U.S. and recent data actually looking a little bit firmer, with the trade talks not quite as bad as they could have been, certainly not quite as bad as we feared they might be as we look into early June, you know, there's little to suggest the Fed needs to cut by as much as markets currently price. And I think that's likely to be the tone of Powell's press conference this time around. Look, he'll say that we've delivered a cut, it's an insurance cut. He would expect to see perhaps some further modest easing, leaving the door open for another cut further down the line, possibly as soon as September, but trying to rein in some of the expectations that the Fed is going through a whole series here of up to five cuts as markets have been pricing over recent weeks.
Do you expect that the outcome of talks between the U.S. and China this week could change the Fed's thinking in terms of the signaling it puts out on Wednesday?
No, I think it's unlikely unless you see something absolutely dramatic coming from this week, which we don't. I mean, I think this week from trade talks, much as we have any expectation, it's for sort of baby steps to confirm the sort of slightly positive tone that came out of the G20 meeting. Even in terms of US-China negotiations, we think a breakdown of the negotiations over that short space of time is unlikely. So we do expect to see modest positives come through, but nothing really groundbreaking at this stage, and really this laying the stage for further talks going further forward. And that being the case, I think the Fed is mindful that this is a process that's going to have ups and downs, but that probably has a long way to run. And I think that the biggest impact that these talks have on the economy for now is the uncertainty they keep presenting to the economy and the headwinds, therefore, that the economy faces. And that's partly why the Fed is having to ease to offset that uncertainty. So no, I think unless you see something very dramatic coming through, and as I say, we don't, I think the Fed sort of looks through this to some extent in this meeting.
So then if the Fed does go ahead with a rate cut, would it be signaling just uncertainty about the trade picture, or would it be sending a signal about broader concerns about the risks to the global economy?
Well, I think there are broader concerns to the risks of the economy, but I think that those broader global risks are reflective of some of the uncertainties in global trade. I mean, if you see some of the weaker areas, we're obviously seeing very depressed activity in some of the, for example, Korean numbers that are coming through, still suggesting there's not been a pickup in global trade coming through there. You know, the China slowdown, buoyed by its domestic economy, but clearly seeing some pressures there. And even looking sort of further afield at the slowdown that's clearly sort of playing on Europe, the weakest spots in Europe are those with the biggest external exposure. You're looking at the sort of German economy and the German manufacturing sector. That's where the weakness is coming through. So I think the two are relatively connected. But you know, the Fed is obviously mindful that if you did see a shoe drop sort of elsewhere, if you did see more of a persistent downturn coming through, then that would be an additional pressure for the U.S. as well. But I think they're broadly connected, and I think that the Fed will take them all in one sweep.
Is there a risk that if the policy becomes more accommodative, that the economy runs too hot, you know, given some of the positive signs we are seeing in economic data?
I mean, yes, there is a risk in the medium term, and I think that's something the Fed is going to be pretty mindful of. So I think we've likened this as a decision-making process as pretty similar to 1989 for the Fed, but also to 1998. Now, obviously, in 1989, the Fed didn't provide any easing, and subsequently, not least because of subsequent actions in 1990, the U.S. economy ended in a modest recession. In 98, you saw similar pressures. The Fed did ease policy alongside other central banks, it has to be added, and the cycle was extended. But it was extended at the cost, if you like, of irrational exuberance continuing the dot-com boom, and then obviously a deep sell-off in stocks a few years later. And I think the Fed will be very keen to avoid that sort of financial imbalance. So I think when we talk about, you know, the economy running too hot, the first casualty of that is likely to be financial imbalances building up, and the Fed will be mindful of that. It should help to see inflation start to pick up. But there are obviously structural headwinds which are keeping inflation somewhat more subdued. So I think the prospects of, you know, runaway inflation in short term is not likely to be the case. But there is an issue for financial imbalances.
David Page, senior economist, AXA Investment Managers. Thank you for this. As we do await the Federal Reserve rate decision, it's coming on Wednesday. We will have full coverage here on Bloomberg Radio. S&P futures are down a point now. Dow futures down 3 points. NASDAQ futures down 4 points. And you're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by the new Range Rover Evoque. It was designed to open your eyes to the possibilities of what's right in your own neighborhood. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for details on the new Range Rover Evoque. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Eisner Amper, named best global accounting firm for the third year in a row by Hedgeweek, a leading hedge fund industry publication. Learn more at EisnerAmper.com/FS.
We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures little change to lower ahead of a busy week for corporate earnings, the economy, and trade talks. Almost 3 months after talks broke down, Chinese and American negotiators meet in Shanghai this week amid tempered expectations for a breakthrough. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie in Beijing.
We are just still miles apart on the core issues. And in some respects, China's position has become less flexible. They've outlined and have been very consistent on this message of three key demands for any trade deal. The US are saying, look, we want to go back to the deal that we thought we had. Progress in these talks that are going to run from Tuesday to Wednesday would be any agreement to continue those talks in Washington.
U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin are leading the delegation from Washington.
Now, this is a big week for news on the U.S. economy, from the Federal Reserve's policy meeting to the monthly employment report. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice has more.
Economists surveyed by Bloomberg are forecasting a quarter-point Fed rate cut. We'll get the news Wednesday. Friday's employment report could provide grist for the mill. Economists are forecasting payroll growth moderated in June, though the unemployment rate remains near a half-century low. Other major data this week, the ISM Factory Index, consumer spending and confidence, and the trade deficit in goods and services. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. More than a third of the companies in the S&P 500 report earnings this week. Heading that list, Apple, Merck, Pfizer, ExxonMobil, and Chevron.
In Europe, shares of Heineken are down more than 5%. The world's second largest brewer reported its weakest first half earnings growth in at least 6 years.
Boris Johnson's high-level Brexit cabinet holds its first meeting today, and the pound is weakening on signs the UK Prime Minister is ramping up preparations for a no-deal Brexit.
Shares of the London Stock Exchange Group are up nearly 15%. Investors are backing LSE's $27 billion bid to acquire Refinitiv, the financial data and trading platform provider.
And shares of Mylan are up more than 25%. Pfizer is in talks to merge its off-patent drugs business with Mylan to form a generic drug giant. Again, S&P futures are a little change, down a point. Dow futures down 7. NASDAQ futures down 5.5. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. At 5:33 on Wall Street, let's get more on what's happening around the world from Bloomberg's John Tucker.
And Nathan, good morning. In Hong Kong, it was the eighth straight weekend of protests as demonstrators marched through the city's central business district. Bloomberg's Karen Lee reports from Hong Kong.
Police shot tear gas and rubber bullets throughout downtown Hong Kong to clear thousands of protesters, at one point leaving clouds of tear gas hovering in the air over part of the city. Public anger toward police has grown after recent violence that has marred the protest movement that's leaderless and unpredictable. In Hong Kong, Karen Lee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
At least 4 people killed, including a suspect, and at least 15 wounded after a shooting at the annual Garlic Festival in Gilroy, California, near San Francisco, Sunday evening. Jack Van Breen says his band was on stage when the gunfire erupted.
From my perspective, look, he was just firing into the biggest bunch of people he could find.
Among the dead is a six-year-old. Representative Gerald Nadler says President Trump deserves to be impeached, but the head of the House Judiciary Committee says the panel is still investigating to determine whether to report resolutions to the full House. Speaker Nancy Pelosi has repeatedly said she wants to have the strongest possible case before pursuing impeachment proceedings. President Trump announced via tweet on Sunday that the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, is leaving that office August 15th. And that he intends to nominate Congressman John Ratcliffe, Republican of Texas, to replace him. Coats clashed with the president on some issues, including Russian election interference. Coats made it clear that Russia did it and that Russia is going to continue trying to interfere in U.S. elections. Mr. Trump has been critical of that conclusion. And President Trump is doubling down in his feud with Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings. Now the president is trying to deflect accusations of racism by labeling the prominent black lawmaker as a racist himself and accusing Democrats of trying to play the race card. Earlier weekend tweets called the congressman's Baltimore area majority black district a rodent-infested mess where no human would want to live. Global News, 24 hours a day, on the air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It is 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, talk about a much-needed win. The Yankees have dropped three straight in Boston by a combined 38-13. They had allowed 73 runs in their last seven games. To the rescue came Domingo Germán, pitched to the sixth inning, gave up just four hits, struck out nine. Yankees finally beat the Red Sox 9-6. Germán is now 13-2 as manager.
You know, when we've seen Germán most of the time, which is really good, it's just filling up the strike zone and the ability to throw all his pitches for strikes. Great poise, you know, in a game we really wanted. He came out and completely set the tone and delivered the goods for us tonight.
Two-run homers for Austin Romine and D.D. Gregorius. Yanks are off tonight, so are the Mets. They're playing better. 10 wins their last 14 games. They finished a sweep of the Pirates 8-7, blowing most of a 6-0 lead. But Edwin Diaz able to save it for Jason Vargas. Michael Conforto hit his 20th home run. Mets are 28-20 at home. Their manager, Mickey Callaway.
I feel like we're syncing things up, right? Our bullpen's performing. We're scoring some runs consistently. Our starters have been outstanding. And that's what it takes. You know, that's the kind of the recipe for wins, and we've been doing that right now. We got to continue to do it. You know, no matter what decisions are made, we just continue to plug along and play the best baseball we possibly can.
Well, you mentioned decisions. The Mets apparently believe they're still in it for the playoffs. They traded two top minor league pitching prospects to Toronto for Marcus Stroman. He was believed to have been targeted by the Yankees, who certainly could use pitching help. The trade deadline is Wednesday. Brooks Koepka, top five in all four majors this year, and yesterday he won the St. Jude in Memphis by three shots. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on Elizabeth Warren's radical plan to beat President Trump at his own game. Also in this week's issue, how a decade of low rates and bond yields is changing everything. Liz McCormick wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
There's not a lot of risk in the bond market, and the bond market is kind of a gauge on, hey, where's the economy going? Where's inflation going? And no one sees it going too far, too fast, you know, and that's why the Fed is cutting again.
And you can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. It's 5:38 on Wall Street, and it's time to check the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Curry. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. U.S. immigration authorities have published a new rule that will make it tougher for real estate developers to fund their projects through a program known as EB-5. It grants permanent residency to foreigners who invest in qualifying businesses, including real estate developments that create jobs in the U.S. Rowan University says it's doubling the size of a grant program to create free course materials for students. It's aimed at improving college affordability. The Glassboro, New Jersey College awarded 10 grants this year to professors in a variety of studies to create low to no cost textbook or reading materials. JPMorgan Chase has won an auction of about $244 million Connecticut general obligation bonds. It's the state's first debt sale backed by its full faith and credit since lawmakers passed a $43 billion budget for the 2020 and 2021 fiscal years. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
All right, Ed, thank you. It's 5:39 on Wall Street, and Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, Walgreens beats a lawsuit tied to its former partnership with the disgraced startup Theranos.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KMOX in St. Louis, we're talking about Heineken's beer sales boost offset by the rising cost of aluminum cans.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the impact on the pound of Boris Johnson's latest Brexit.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm talking about tech company Clear providing biometric screening services for United Airlines.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. U.S. soybean exports to China slumped in the first half to the lowest level in almost a decade.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Robert Bosch sees car production falling 5% this year.
And later today, we get earnings from Beyond Meat, which has seen shares surge more than 800% since its IPO. We get more from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The plant-based faux meat producer had the best-performing initial public offering so far this year, and its first quarterly results as a public company topped Wall Street forecasts. Some analysts say demand for meat alternatives could make Beyond Meat profitable rather soon. Last week, Dunkin' Brands announced it will add the company's breakfast sausage patties to the menu. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Futures are little changed to lower at the moment. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by Marks Paneth, LLP. Marks Paneth Tax Advisors have helped family businesses reach their financial goals for over 100 years. At Marks Paneth, success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/tax.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European equities are little changed, and so are S&P futures. Asian stocks fell at the start of a packed week, featuring everything from the resumption of U.S.-China trade talks to an expected Federal Reserve interest rate cut and the monthly U.S. payrolls report. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 2 points now. Dow futures down 11. NASDAQ futures down 7. The DAX in Germany is down almost 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.05%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.84%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.1% or 8 cents at $56.28 a barrel. COMEX gold little change, down 80 cents to $14.3140 an ounce. The euro 1.1125 against the dollar. The British pound at 1.2338 and the yen 108.62. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
And Karen, violence flared in Hong Kong again with police firing tear gas and rubber bullets at protesters and arresting at least 49. President Trump says he plans to nominate a loyalist, Representative John Ratcliffe, as president, as the director of national intelligence, replacing Dan Coats. And who says video games are a waste of time? Kyle Giersdorf, a 16-year-old from Pennsylvania, known by his handle Booga, won the $3 million grand prize at the Fortnite World Cup in New York. Sports, the Yankees avoid the sweep. They beat the Red Sox. The Mets win and acquire Toronto pitcher Marcus Stroman. Elsewhere, the Nationals, the Giants, and A's all win. The Orioles lose. Global news, 24 hours a day, on the air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Opinion, informed perspectives, and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news.
Coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street, it is time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion. Managing Editor Edward Evans is with us from our London Bureau. Good morning, Ed. As UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson begins daily meetings with his Brexit cabinet, Mark Gilbert's looking at what no deal could mean for the City of London.
Yes. Now, no deal, of course, is a big threat to the City of London's status as the centre of European finance. But the square mile is missing out on the chance to lead one of the the charge into one of the hottest new financial products in finance, in part because of the government's reluctance to participate in it. I'm talking about, of course, green bonds. This is a market that is growing very fast. More than $100 billion of green bonds have been sold globally by the beginning of this month. This is a market that's doubled in size in just 2 years, and with climate change becoming more and more apparent, its future trajectory is quite clear. Now, countries from Chile to the Netherlands have all sold debt designed to finance environmentally projects. France has been at the forefront of this market, and perhaps not surprisingly, three of its big banks, Crédit Agricole, BNP and SocGen, are some of the biggest players in this market. The UK has one bank in the top 10, and that's HSBC. Now, that's perhaps not surprising because the UK government has been absent from the list of issuers of these bonds. Britain's Debt Management Office, which manages gilt sales, says they don't consider them to be value for money compared to traditional gilts. Now, this seems to be short-sighted. Now, admittedly, the Dutch government's issue of sold back in May yields slightly more than a traditional bond, but the average gap is less than 5 basis points. It's tiny. And if the UK is going to become a home of the green finance, it seems a small price to pay. Now, before entering Parliament, Chancellor of the Exchequer Sajid Javid was Managing Director at Deutsche Bank, so he, of all politicians, should appreciate that the city needs to grasp any and every opportunity to position itself for a world after Brexit. So Johnson should allow him to instruct the DMO to embrace green bonds as a relatively cheap way to put London in the mix. The sooner, the better.
Now, taking a look even further at what the impact could be on finance, Mark Whitehouse is looking at some signs that perhaps banks really aren't too worried about Brexit. What's he looking at?
Yeah, on one level, banks appear to be getting ready to leave the European Union. Bank of America is setting up a new Paris office. Deutsche Bank's hired an executive on a multi-million euro bonus to oversee its preparations. But one thing has changed surprisingly little: the actual volume of business that banks do out of their UK offices. London has long been a nexus for international lending, not just by UK banks. A German bank might use its UK subsidiary to lend to a Guernsey hedge fund, for instance. Now, the Bank for International Settlements tracks these cross-border claims, and they serve as a useful indicator of the UK capital's financial preeminence. Now, we started to look at this a while ago, and initially there didn't seem to be much of an effect. Then, back in mid-2008, it seemed to be. But now it's pretty clear that the quarterly changes we saw back then were little more than noise. They weren't unusually large by historical standards, and they swung back up again at the end of 2018. So, in all told, according to the BIS, the claims of UK banks' UK offices on borrowers in other countries have increased by a cumulative $250 billion since the vote to leave back in June 2016. Now, that's not huge in relation to the nearly $5 trillion in total claims outstanding, and pretty close to the average rate of growth for the past few decades. Given the risks, though, why aren't banks fleeing? One possible explanation might be that there's no need to hurry. Once they've prepared their offices elsewhere in Europe, it's easy to move the assets when necessary. Another possibility is that bankers don't believe the UK will actually leave and hence aren't really prepared. So if so, Britain's exit, if it does happen, could prove a lot more surprising and more damaging than it otherwise would be.
Our last minute here, we're expecting the U.S. Central Bank, the Federal Reserve, to cut rates Wednesday. And the question Tim Dewey is answering is it just the beginning?
Hello?
Oh, sounds like we may have lost Bloomberg Opinion Managing Editor Edward Evans. But you can read much more from Bloomberg Opinion by visiting Bloomberg.com/opinion. Or if you're a Bloomberg Terminal subscriber, just type OPIN GO on the search bar. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Potisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Walgreens and its board have beaten a lawsuit accusing the pharmacy giant's directors of failing to keep an eye on its partnership with disgraced blood testing startup Theranos. New safety guidance from the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration could mean companies will have to change some underground emergency refuges to protect workers in an emergency. And EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler continues to insist the agency's science advisors complete reviews of federal air quality standards for ozone and particulate matter by December 2020. Despite their pleas for more time.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now, another legal story we're watching. Facebook inking a record $5 billion settlement with the Federal Trade Commission over privacy violations. At the same time, though, the agency is investigating whether Facebook violated antitrust laws. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to NYU law professor Harry First.
Harry, isn't it all unusual to have the FTC concluding one investigation on a company and then starting another?
It's not necessarily unusual, and they're two actually very separate cases. The settlement that they just reached was for violating a 2012 order that that Facebook agreed to with the FTC. So, and it was an order that revolved around privacy issues, not around competition issues. So they're really actually quite separate. If we had two separate agencies, one for privacy, one for competition, then you'd have a different name on the door. But So I don't find anything unexpected, actually, in the FTC finishing one and also doing another.
So two agencies, that brings up my next question. How does this FTC investigation fit in with the Justice Department's antitrust division escalating its scrutiny into tech giants like Facebook and Google?
Well, I find this actually surprising and a little troubling. Originally, there had been reports that the Federal Trade Commission and the Justice Department Antitrust Division, both of which have jurisdiction, and legally they can actually investigate the same party. They can actually bring cases separately against the same party for the same behavior, but they haven't done that. So they try to coordinate efforts, which is sensible. Originally, it looked like they were dividing up the Big Tech Four, where the FTC would have jurisdiction over Facebook and Amazon, and the Justice Department over Google and Apple. Now it looks like something has happened, and I don't quite know what, but the Justice Department's press release, which in itself is an unusual thing to do in antitrust cases, to say, oh, guess what, we are investigating. Usually if you're investigating, you start investigating. Mm-hmm. You don't issue a press release. So why did they do it? And it does appear that they're going to investigate all four of these companies.
And that's NYU Law Professor Harry First speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. And right now, futures are little changed. S&P futures are down a point. Dow futures down 7. NASDAQ futures down 5.5. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. CAC in Paris down about the same. And the FTSE 100 is up 1%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.05%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.84%. NYMEX crude oil up almost 0.2% or 9 cents at $56.29 a barrel. COMEX gold little change down 80 cents to $14.31.40 an ounce. The pound is at 1.2334 against the dollar, and the yen 108.63. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.